nīngāṃ kādāṃ nyambī samchāṃ tamche dhukhī sārjī jīgō mārāṃ bōchā tō parāśā tī chā tō dhukhā tāmbī chū tsiri jīnī nyāntē nyāṃ sāpāṃ rājō nyambī sāmbāp shāngchīpā chūtā sēm chētē lakvarak sāmbā rājīrās.
Please begin by giving rise to the excellent motivation of bodhicitta, the mind of awakening, with the wish to bring all sentient beings, so vast in number that they fill space itself, to the precious state of perfect Buddhahood. And think it is for this purpose that you will now listen well to the Dharma teachings and put into practice correctly what it is that you hear.
Subject or tal, chanchip kusim, kurkushakayona, teni chamdu kurkushakayona, lami lamjurana, takans and that you yoreta. Mala mixer katenda terankaya, yo mares. Mayak Jimson carriedina, me, shirtang, arang, rang with abdang jabsona young. Teni tubas of nyurtang, chenambi young, chumambo sanore, chumambo shigiore, daily yanchini. Rang yam yonda, chick chiglati lamptunda, chu driftonda, chikareshini chu yamselengore, canreshina choose at the carere, choose at the yamselena carag pantoyore, to move the chick chingasu, masson chignoms and chick chiglatem, have said Javrivina, ten dihiore, tell at any meat around chikakashi, jiore, jim, mixer, ten number ni tsavan in mama com amnion bag, tendanga, chick. Chu chapar changing, I love it, son, you marry. Tata courage in a chu matsu tama, mumbo jure, mumbo toyore. Tatu tanga to kanda sheni, nyamsle gogundu. Kanda sheni ronjitan, tigogundu. Tu matsu terang, matsu tama gishes over nyamdu. Tenda kacha lavere, mixer coat, and then that's a munet on it, terang yana sonya sarjin doga chu. Tendang you left shige o marda. Labia Gedan, Yundan Layo Mare, the Yunna and Maran Sota, that is at a Lama Chick Soma. The new Hong Motors Mambo Yam did you chick chill at Hapton Shire. The Teranga to Captain Dares.
When a Lama teaches the Dharma, generally there's some kind of subject or topic. They teach on bodhicitta, or they teach on the vows of refuge, or they teach on the practice of guru yoga. Or whatever the case may be, there is some subject that they speak upon. As for myself today, I have nothing particularly extraordinary to say. I don't come here with some special explanation of some sublime topic. And the reason that I have no such exceptional or extraordinary teachings to share with you is because I have not had great opportunity to hear many, many teachings beyond what you all have heard. In fact, you have all heard many Dharma teachings, and you all know a great deal of Dharma. And I am not going to come today and present something beyond what you already know, so don't have any great expectations like that. So what am I going to say to you? We are all here today, myself included, as students of the same teachers. We all have the same gurus. And together we have received many Dharma teachings. We have received many empowerments and transmissions seated at the feet of the same great masters. And just as members of a family might speak to one another and offer each other advice or share their own experiences of what they commonly know, that is the way that I am here before you today. It is to offer that kind of advice or share that kind of experience, not to give some astounding teaching that you can hear today and put into practice and attain Buddhahood tomorrow. I'm not here to give that kind of discourse, sorry. But just as those who are members of the same family, can help show each other the path, can help remind each other how to practice, the reasons for practice, what the Dharma really is, what the benefit of practicing really is. Members of the same family can remind each other of those sorts of things. That will be the subject of my talk today. That's why I'm here, to say a little like that, just based on my own experience, just sharing advice or reminders, but nothing special and nothing extraordinary, nothing that you haven't heard before. So have no such expectation. We have all heard a great many Dharma teachings, and we have received a great many transmissions. But how do we actually put those into practice? How do we actually mingle the meaning of those teachings with our own mind streams? That is a question worth investigating, and that is why I am here today, to try and share with you a little something along those lines. We are all students of the same teachers, and so, based on that, as we have all received many empowerments, transmissions, and instructions together, then I come to share with you what little I know. I am not coming here in any way to present myself as someone who knows the Dharma, and therefore everyone should come listen to me, great scholar that I am, teach the Dharma. Nothing like that. I am not thinking I should come and teach the Dharma because I am so scholarly and learned. Nothing like that. My thought really is just that we are all gathered here together out of the force of our karma. Our previously accumulated karma has brought us all together. Even though we were born in different places, I myself was born in Tibet, in a region called Golok. Most of you were born here in America, a few maybe in China and elsewhere. But wherever we were born, we have all ended up here through the force of our karma. And we are all here. We are all Buddhist, trying to practice the Buddhist teachings. And as that is the case, since we have this shared experience, we are all here in one place together, we are all trying to practice, then it seems like it might be of some benefit for me to share some of my experience with you. And based on that, based on this shared karma, then I asked if I could come and share a few words with the Sangha. It was not my thought that everyone should come and that people with great qualities and great knowledge already should come and that they would be astounded by my scholarship. Nothing like that. I'm not pretending to have anything to offer those who are learned and accomplished. I myself am not presenting myself as one who has tamed his own mind through the Dharma, and therefore I have great and special things to share with others. That's not why I'm here before you with something to say today. My thought in being here is only that I myself am practicing the Dharma, and others like me who are also practicing, they might find some of the experience I have to share beneficial. And my motivation is really only that for myself and others like me on the path, they might gain some benefit from my words, and so I come to offer what I have to offer. But I really claim nothing beyond that. And my motivation is only to be of benefit to myself and those like me. Now, please don't be angry thinking that I am saying that you are like me, so low in qualities. Most of you are quite beyond me. I am only saying that my reason or motivation in coming to share a few words with you today is thinking that it will be of benefit to those myself and those like myself, not to those with greater knowledge or understanding. All sentient beings throughout the six realms, wherever they might be, whichever of those experiences might be arising to them, each and every one of them desires to be happy and desires not to suffer. There is no being who does not wish for happiness and who does not fear suffering. Among the beings, in all of their different experiences, in all the different conditions that they are experiencing, we have been born among the human beings. And not only have we attained a human body in the human realm, but we have attained a precious human birth, complete with the 18 freedoms and advantages that allow us to encounter and practice the Dharma. In general, in the human realm, if we look around, we see that in general, human beings too Of course, desire happiness and wish to avoid suffering, but even in the best case scenario, they only manage to create a little temporary happiness. And there isn't even any thought of creating the ultimate happiness of Buddhahood itself. If we look within those who have encountered the Dharma, we can look at those who have met the Dharma and those who are practicing, and whether we consider that there are a great many or just a few, we need to examine what is the reason for practice. When we come here to the temple, we need to see for ourselves, why are we coming? Why are we coming to practice? Any place where there is the opportunity for practice, here we have a temple, we have a building where one can come and receive empowerment and transmission, you can receive teachings and instructions, you can meditate, you can recite practices. There are opportunities in various different places where you can actually go through the whole formal philosophical Buddhist training. You can actually go through the formal training in how to meditate or engage in retreat in the formal way. But regardless of whatever kinds of supports for practice we have, just by the mere fact that we are Buddhists and that we have entered the door of Buddhism, we need to consider, what is it that we're doing as Buddhists? Why is it that we are practicing? Really, as Buddhists, we should be considering only two things: what will bring benefit to ourselves in the greatest possible sense, and what will bring benefit to others. As not only Buddhists, but as those who are practicing the Mahayana tradition, we should always be cherishing and holding others before ourselves. We should always be thinking of the benefit of others. The Mahayana motivation is founded in understanding that wherever space pervades, there are sentient beings. And wherever there are sentient beings, those beings are suffering. And therefore, all six realms of beings, all of samsara, all of existence itself, is filled with suffering beings. And understanding that, we will wish to bring them benefit. That is the motivation of the Mahayana. We think, I want to be enlightened, I want to attain realization, so that I might be of benefit to all those beings, so vast in number that they fill space itself. That should be our real motivation. And when we practice, that should be our motivation each instant. The only way we can tell if this is our motivation or not is by examining our own mind. Whatever kind of dharma we are engaging in, this motivation should still be the same. Receiving empowerment, receiving transmission, whatever the case may be, the motivation should always be an altruistic motivation. As far as benefiting oneself, the motivation should be for one's ultimate benefit, what will benefit us not only now, but in future lives. If our motivation is only concerned with the circumstances of this life, that is not the proper motivation for practice. And yet, if we look at our own minds, how often is practice going on just because we want some benefit in this life? Many, many people practice because they want a longer life, they want to be free of illness, they want wealth, status, power, or whatever the case may be. The only way that we will know for ourselves if this is our motivation, an incorrect motivation, or whether our motivation is really for our own greatest benefit and the greatest benefit of others, is if we look at our own mind. This isn't something difficult. This isn't some profound or complicated philosophical point. It doesn't require long contemplation. Just look at your own mind. Look at your own motivation. If you are just practicing or engaging in Dharma in whatever way, because you want to dispel obstacles in this one life, or because you want to attain wealth or status, freedom from sickness, or whatever the case may be, in this one life. And that is why you come to the temple, and that is why you come to practice, and so on and so forth. That is not a real Buddhist motivation. To practice with that motivation is not to be practicing Dharma. If our motivation is only concerned with the temporary conditions of this life, and we are practicing Dharma with that as our motivation, that is a grave mistake. We have to look beyond that. We have to increase the scope of our motivation. Because as long as we're only looking for temporary happiness within this life, even animals are working in that same way. Even animals are just trying to find comfort for themselves in the short term. Even animals are engaging in this, that, and the other, hoping to find some temporary relief or some temporary happiness. If we are practicing the Dharma with our sights set no further than this life itself, then our motivation is like the motivation of animals, not even a real human motivation. As practitioners of the Dharma, we need to lift ourselves beyond that. We need a motivation that surpasses that. And why is this? Why do we need something more than that or further than that? We have a human body. We are not animals. We have achieved a human body, which in itself is remarkable. And yet, among humans, we not only have a human body in general, we have a precious human body endowed with the 18 circumstances that permit the practice of Dharma. We have encountered the teachings of Buddha Shakyamuni. We have the freedom to practice those teachings, to think about them and internalize them. We have all of the luxuries and comforts necessary to make Dharma practice possible in our lives. If we fail to use that, even to accomplish our own long-term good, what a great waste that is. That is really to be like an animal. That is really to be not like a human being at all. So always, whenever you are practicing, you have to examine your own mind. Your mind should be turned to the path of virtue. Your mind should be filled with virtue, meaning that your motivation should be the correct motivation. As long as your motivation is so short-sighted that it only encompasses your comfort and good circumstances in this life, hoping to be free of obstacles in this life, as long as you are that short-sighted in your practice, then you are not practicing correctly. You are making a great error in your practice. Now, when we make aspirational prayers and so forth, the short-term benefits are included there, yes. May we be free of suffering in this life. May our life be long. May we be free of sickness. May our obstacles be dispelled and so forth. Those are included. But they are not the sole focus, and they are not the main motivation for practice. Practice has to be imbued with bodhicitta from beginning to end. And when we come to the temple, when we come to practice, the thought should not be, may this bring me good things in this life alone. Our motivation should not be that short-sighted. We should consider all sentient beings. We should consider the scope of suffering in samsara. We should have a mind filled with renunciation, renouncing all samsara's sufferings. With that, our motivation will be correct. If we just think, I myself want to attain the state of Buddhahood, I myself want to go to the pure realm of Dewa Chen, or whatever the case may be, this is not enough. As Buddhists, this is not enough to have that be the limit of our motivation. So please check your own mind continuously. Again, this is not difficult. It doesn't require long and earnest contemplation. It doesn't require understanding of something complicated. This is just looking at your own mind. If we really understand samsara's suffering, we will renounce samsara. And if we renounce samsara, our sincere wish will be to be liberated from samsara. If we are practicing Dharma and we haven't really developed renunciation of samsara, then we're not sincerely wishing to go beyond samsara. Then our Dharma practice is not going to be the cause of going beyond samsara because we're not even really hoping for that. So please examine your own mind constantly and check your own motivation. This is very important. How many years has it been since you entered the door of Dharma, since you became a Buddhist? 50 or 60, 20 or 30, 5 or 10, maybe 6, maybe 3, maybe just 1 or 2. However many years have gone by since you began practicing and studying the Dharma, if you have been maintaining a Mahayana motivation for those years, however many or few they are, then that is most excellent. Then you are making progress. That means that you are actually practicing the Dharma correctly. Whether you have been hearing the Dharma or practicing or meditating or studying, whatever the case may be, if you have been maintaining the Mahayana motivation, maintaining the bodhicitta, maintaining your sense of altruism, then however many years have gone by since you entered the Dharma, that is very good. It means that you have been holding the very root or essence of what it means to be a Buddhist. You have been holding the root of Dharma itself. However, if your motivation has not been pure, then no matter how much practice, how much learning you have managed to get under your belt in however many years you have been a Buddhist, there really hasn't been any Dharma going on that has not been Mahayana Dharma, because it has not been supported by a Mahayana motivation. And even though the Dharma that you have been studying and so-called practicing has been called the Mahayana Dharma, your practice has not produced Mahayana roots of virtue. Because the difference in the vehicles is not a difference in the Dharma that you are practicing, but a difference in your motivation in practice. However long you have been practicing, if your mind has been filled with the Mahayana motivation, then you have been practicing Mahayana Dharma and creating Mahayana roots of virtue. Think for yourself. Think and know, for we know our own minds. Who has been practicing and studying for a long time, but has only been thinking in the short term, has only been thinking of their own benefit, and maybe even of their own benefit in this life alone, without any thought or wish to be freed from samsara sufferings, much less attain the full omniscience of Buddhahood itself, they have not been practicing the Dharma. Whereas even if one has been practicing for a short time, but practicing with the correct motivation, sincerely desiring to be freed from samsara, with a mind filled with altruism and bodhicitta, then they are really practicing and they are really creating the roots of virtue. The difference in whether one's practice is creating the cause for liberation or not is the difference in whether one's mind is filled with the correct motivation or not. We do need to understand to know what the correct motivation is, and then we need to actually fill our mind with that motivation itself. Let's say you examine your own mind and you think, I have been practicing the Dharma for however many years. And you look at your own mind, and you look at your own motivation, and you realize, I have not been practicing authentically. You think, maybe I have learned how to make tormas well, maybe I can beat the drum like a real pro, but I know my own motivation, and my motivation has not been a Mahayana motivation. And therefore, I have not really been practicing the Mahayana Dharma. Let's say you understand this about yourself. You should realize that it is not too late. You can, from that moment forward, make the determination that you will, from this time onward, hold the Mahayana motivation for the rest of your life and make that commitment and fill your mind with that motivation and the resolve to maintain that motivation until your death or until Buddhahood itself, and then practice the Dharma, and that practice will be authentic. You might recognize, I have been practicing for maybe many years or maybe a few years, but honestly speaking, my practice has always been sullied by self-grasping and self-interest, and therefore I have not really been practicing authentically. You can recognize that you have maybe wasted a lot of time in false practice until now, but know that it's not too late and that you can change your motivation. If you see that your motivation is not authentic and pure, you still have the chance to modify it. You actually can correct it. You can make it authentic. You can make it pure. This is not easy because we have countless lifetimes worth of habit of having a selfish motivation. Our selfish motivation has been with us for lifetime after lifetime, rebirth after rebirth. And therefore, to change such a long-standing habit is no easy or simple thing. But it is possible. And in fact, to change your motivation, You don't have to push yourself to travel some long distance. You don't have to work very hard physically. You don't have to do anything externally that requires a great amount of effort or hardship. You can change your motivation seated comfortably right there on your cushion, your mind relaxed and open. That way you will be able to change your motivation. Even though it doesn't involve great physical effort, that is not to say that it is easy. It is not easy because of our long-standing habit of selfishness over how many countless lifetimes. We have very bad habits that have been with us for a very long time. And so it is not easy to overcome those. I'm not saying that it is. But it is possible. And so when we examine our mind and what we find are bad habits and improper motivation that need to be changed, we should know that that change is absolutely possible. If you take a piece of paper and roll it up and leave it rolled up for a long time, then when you try to spread it out flat again, it keeps rolling up, right? It has that strong habit of rolling up and it won't lie flat. But if you put it underneath something heavy for a long time, you can flatten it back out again. The paper of our mind is like this. It has been rolled up for a long time, for many lifetimes worth of impure motivation. And now it needs something heavy to sit on top of it to flatten it out again. So what is that heavy thing that we need? Well, having started to practice and examining our own mind, we need to decrease our strong habit of always being selfish and always acting out of self-interest. We decrease that habit and we increase the habit of altruism, our concern and consideration for others, our compassion, our wish for others' well-being. We make our altruism more and more heavy, and that is what will flatten out the paper of our mind once again. Having entered the door of the Dharma, whether we are actual Buddhists or not, whether we are really practicing or not, whether we are practitioners or just the show or image of practitioners, depends on our motivation. It doesn't matter how many tormas you know how to make. It doesn't matter how well you can beat the drum. If you are practicing the Dharma, any kind of Dharma, it means you are acting against the poisons and passions in your own mind stream. Because all 84,000 categories of the Buddha's teaching, they all have the same purpose, which is to act as the antidote for the poisons such as desire that fill our mind streams. If we are doing a practice that is decreasing our poisons and passions, then we are doing Dharma. If we are doing a so-called practice and we are not decreasing our poisons, if our meditation, for example, is actually increasing our pride rather than decreasing it, or any negative characteristic like that, then that meditation or that practice is not Buddha Dharma, because all Buddha Dharma acts as an antidote to the poisons and to the passions. However many years you have been a Buddhist, however long you have been practicing, you still need to examine your mind and check and see if the practice is doing what it should. Are your afflictions, are your poisons, are your passions actually decreasing? Or is your desire, or your anger, or your jealousy, your pride, or your ignorance itself, are these increasing? You think back to when you first started the Dharma, and when you became a Buddhist, and you think about your own mind now, and compare, and say, have my five poisons decreased? Are they the same as before? Have they actually increased? Because that's absolutely possible. You can become a Buddhist and then get on quite the ego trip about it, thinking, I am a practitioner. I have studied all this Dharma. I know how to do such and such practice. I have met these wonderful teachers. It's amazing how people do develop that kind of idea. It's very good to meet excellent teachers. It's very good to meet realized masters. It's very good to meet those of our time, the teachers of our time who have great renown and great qualities. And meeting with them is like meeting with the Buddha in actual human form. And we can see or know those masters of our own time, such as Dzogchen Rinpoche or Khyentse Rinpoche or Shachyo Rinpoche. And to actually be able to meet with them, to actually see them in the flesh, this shows that you have tremendous merit, great merit. But just having the great merit to meet a teacher, why would that be some reason that you should become more proud? Why would meeting with great masters be some reason that your pride should increase? That seems very strange. If you say, I met with such and such Lama, and you use that as a way to boost your ego and increase your pride, then you're using the fact that you met a great Lama to show that you actually don't understand any Dharma at all. If your pride increases when you meet a great master, that's just a sign that you're not really a practitioner. When you meet a great Lama, you should recognize that this is your opportunity to encounter the genuine qualities of enlightened mind. And you should be filled with this yearning and this understanding that what you need to do is transform your own mind to bring forth those qualities yourself, which means you need to decrease your own passions and your own poisons so that that can be possible. So therefore, if you meet with a Lama, you certainly should not have an increase in your pride. That is to take that opportunity and completely turn it on its head. Not only to waste it, but to use it in the worst possible way. If you meet a Lama of great renown, such as the Dalai Lama or the Karmapa or whatever the case may be, and you use that meeting with a sublime being as a way for your own passions and poisons to increase, that's a sign that your meeting with that great being was of no benefit to you whatsoever. We should know what it is that the lamas are representing, and we should know how to rely upon them. And to meet with them and have that meeting be the cause of an increase in our poisons is completely to waste the opportunity to meet one of these Buddhas in the flesh. If you are a practitioner and you use the fact that you are a practitioner or that you met great lamas or whatever the case may be, if you use any aspect of your dharma or your practice to increase your pride and your ego, you are sure you are puffing yourself up. You are making yourself bigger and bigger. But that is a completely empty or completely false kind of height that you are attaining. It's like if you take cotton and you pull the cotton apart. You can take a small amount of cotton, and if you pull it apart into little tufts, you can end up with this big pile of little cotton tufts. But it doesn't take much. You press down on that pile, and it collapses. It's just like, it's like being puffed up with hot air. There's no substance there. And to puff yourself up with dharma like that, it shows there's no substance there whatsoever. To puff yourself up using the dharma itself, it's really a sign that the dharma or meeting with a lama, or whatever the case may be, that these are being of no benefit to you whatsoever. The omniscient Longchenpa, Longchen Rabjam, himself said that every practice, in order to be fully qualified, needs to be performed with three parts complete. In the beginning, one should generate the mind of bodhicitta. During the actual practice, one should maintain non-conceptuality. And at the end, one should dedicate the roots of virtue. And in order for a practice to actually create the causes for liberation from samsara and the attainment of full omniscience itself, a practice must be complete in all three of these ways. When we are practicing, as we consider ourselves Buddhists, we should be practicing with a Buddhist motivation, a proper Buddhist motivation. So what is that proper Buddhist motivation? The motivation of a true Dharma practitioner is the wish to attain liberation, meaning freedom from samsara in its entirety, and to attain the state of full Buddhahood or omniscience itself. That should be our focus. That should be our intention. That should be our purpose. We don't need to think long and hard, how do I make it so that my practice is actually bringing this about? How do I practice in such a way that I know I am creating the causes for liberation and the attainment of omniscience? Longchenpa just told us. Longchenpa laid it out very clearly. If you want to practice and have that practice actually be a cause for bringing about liberation and the perfect state of omniscience, you need to make sure that your practice has all three of these factors complete. It is not suitable, it is not appropriate, and it is not effective to do a practice missing any of these three parts. To do a practice missing any of these three parts and think that that practice is still going to be a cause for your liberation or omniscience, that is ridiculous. So, what are these and how do we actually do them? These three are, first of all, at the beginning or in preparation, you must generate the mind of bodhicitta. Whenever we do any kind of practice, engage in any kind of virtue, or do any sort of dharma, our mind should be filled with bodhicitta. It is said that to fill the mind with bodhicitta as the basis for practice, this is to know how to apply the method for the creation of virtue, or the creation of the roots of virtue. This lays the foundation for the roots of virtue. Now, it doesn't matter whether we are practicing big dharma or small dharma, great dharma or little dharma. Whatever the case may be, we should always use the skillful method of applying bodhicitta. We should be precise in our motivation, because without the proper motivation, the entire practice goes off track. For example, even if you were to stay in the traditional three-month retreat, just to stay in retreat, your body in retreat, without proper motivation, you are not creating roots of virtue that are going to bring about your liberation. To stay in 3 months retreat or to do solitary retreat, just to go and stay by yourself in some place without correct motivation, that's not particularly virtuous. Look at all the wild animals who live by themselves in the wilderness. Look at the animals who live in the forests, or who live alone in caves, or alone on rocky mountains. Those animals are not creating the roots of virtue. They are not creating the causes for liberation and omniscience. They're just hanging out in the woods. If you go and stay in some remote place, but without correct motivation, you're not creating roots of virtue any more than your fellow animals hanging out in the woods with you are. So check your motivation, always, because that's what's going to make the difference as to whether you are really creating the causes for liberation or not. It doesn't matter if you are undertaking some great dharma endeavor, such as doing 3-year retreat in a fully qualified way, or whether you are doing some seemingly small act of virtue, making an offering of one butter lamp or one stick of incense. It doesn't matter how great or small the virtue itself seems to be. It is dependent on the motivation, and whether your mind is filled with bodhicitta, that is going to determine how great the roots of virtue from that dharma or from that positive action actually are. Even offering one butter lamp or one stick of incense, if you offer it with a pure motivation, with a mind filled with altruism, you will create great waves of merit. You will create an overwhelming roots of virtue, virtue on that scale. Whatever you do, great or small, if it is motivated by bodhicitta, then it will be the cause for your liberation and eventual omniscience. And this is what it means to hold the method for creating roots of virtue. We should really not be prejudiced in our minds about what is big dharma and what is small dharma, what is important and what is unimportant as far as the creation of virtue. We shouldn't think, oh, if we go to a big dharma center and there's a really famous lama there, then I really need to cultivate bodhicitta because that's really important and that's a really big deal. Whereas, if I'm just offering one butter lamp or doing some prostrations or reciting the verses of refuge, I don't really need to cultivate bodhicitta because it's not really that big a deal. That's completely inappropriate. That's completely mistaken thinking. Anything that you do, any kind of virtue that you engage in, whether seemingly big or seemingly small, In either case, your motivation should only be the motivation of bodhicitta. That is extremely important to remember and to remind yourself of constantly. As we are all Buddhists, we have entered the door of Dharma, and this should always be our motivation. Whatever it is that we are doing, whatever practice we are accumulating or reciting makes no difference. Any practice, any Dharma, any virtuous activity, any way to produce merit, these should always be motivated by bodhicitta. We are here, many students of Gyaltra Rinpoche. I think all of Gyaltra Rinpoche's students have done their ngundro or are doing their ngundro. When you do your ngundro, when you are accumulating those 500,000, are you accumulating those 500,000 with a mind filled with bodhicitta or not? Because if you are motivated by bodhicitta, if you are motivated by altruism and doing your ngundro, then you are creating roots of virtue that are meaningful, that are powerful, and that will be effective. I'm not saying this because I think you've never heard it before. Trust me, I know that you have all received these teachings many times over. I know that many great masters have spoken again and again on the importance of bodhicitta, what it is, how to maintain it, and so forth. You all already know these teachings. You have heard these teachings. There is no time right now for me to go into explanations of bodhicitta very extensively, nor am I qualified to do so. But I just want to emphasize to everyone the importance of having bodhicitta as your motivation always, whatever kind of dharma, seemingly great or seemingly small, you are engaging in. I know that you all know this. I'm not saying it because I think you don't know it. I'm not saying it because I think you've never heard these teachings. I know you have, again and again, from lamas far more qualified than myself. But if you are like me, sometimes we forget. And forgetting, we need to be reminded. So I am just trying to remind us all of the importance of having the correct motivation. So at the beginning, you must cultivate bodhicitta. In the actual practice, you should maintain non-conceptuality. This means having the correct understanding and focus when you are doing the main section of the practice or actually engaging in the main practice itself. Again, it doesn't matter whether the practice that you are doing, whether that main practice is seemingly great or seemingly small. Just as any kind of virtue, great or small, needed to have the correct foundation or the correct beginning by generating bodhicitta. In the same way, you need to do the main part of the practice correctly as well. If you are doing a generation stage practice, for example, whether you are visualizing yourself as the deity or the deity in front or both, however the visualization in that practice develops, you need to be keeping your mind focused on the visualization and not being distracted by other things. Now, when the omniscient Longchenpa says that in the actual practice you should maintain non-conceptuality, the point of that is if one maintains non-conceptuality, then there is no way that distractions such as the five poisons are going to be able to arise in your mind and draw you away from the practice. Therefore, your practice will be perfectly pure all the way through. If we are not able to maintain non-conceptuality, we should know that this instruction means we should not be distracted. We should not let our mind follow the five poisons or external distractions, but keep it on the path of virtue. Keep your focus upon the practice itself. That is how you engage in the main part of the actual practice. It doesn't matter whether you are practicing for a short time or a long time, just a few seconds or a minute, or an hour, or a day, or a year, whatever the case may be, to do the main section of the practice properly without being distracted, without being drawn under the power of the five poisons. And maintaining the non-conceptual view, if you can, is extremely important. Just as one lays the foundation of the practice by cultivating a bodhicitta, because this is the method by which you create the foundation for roots of virtue. Now, in the actual practice, when you are generating those roots of virtue, you avoid distraction in order to keep all of the conditions just right for the production of the most powerful virtue. So this instruction on maintaining the right focus throughout the main part of the practice is to keep us from falling into distraction, which would make non-conducive circumstances for the creation of virtue. So eliminating those non-conducive circumstances, distraction, we keep our focus on just the production of roots of virtue itself. And this produces the greatest possible virtue in the practice. And again, in the best case scenario, then this means to maintain non-conceptuality itself. If we are able to practice in this way, we will create great virtue in an unimpeded way without the obstacles of non-conducive circumstances, meaning distraction, arising, and those roots of virtue will be created and not destroyed. They will be created and endure and increase during that practice. Having completed the practice, then, Longchenpa's instructions for the end of the practice is in order to keep the roots of virtue that you've now generated from declining, but to ensure that they only ever increase, you need to dedicate the merit at the end. Again, ideally, the dedication of merit would be done in the state of non-conceptuality with that level of realization. But for beginners, we should at least consider that the roots of virtue that we are dedicating at the end of the practice are the roots of all virtue throughout the three times, which means all the roots of virtue that the transcendent accomplished ones, the Buddhas of the past, have ever created. All of those that are being created now by the Buddhas of the present in their enlightened activity, and all that will be created by the Buddhas of the future. We should think that all possible roots of virtue are gathered together and dedicated at once, or dedicated together. And we recite verses of dedication, such as the verse that begins, Jampao Pawo Chitar Kimpadam. We recite these kinds of verses to direct our intention in just that way, that we are dedicating our roots of virtue just as all of the Buddhas of the past, present, and future have and are and will dedicate theirs. And we are including all possible roots of virtue together with our own in that dedication. It is said in the Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life that when one cultivates bodhicitta, then whatever one does, motivated by and held by bodhicitta, including the dedication at the end, then that virtue will only ever increase. And it will increase and increase forever, more and more. It is said that if one does not seal one's bodhicitta, or any action performed with bodhicitta, if one does not seal it with the reinforcement of bodhicitta as dedication at the end, then it will be like the plantain tree, which is said to bear fruit one time, and then that's it. It will never bear fruit again. But if you do seal whatever practice or virtue you are creating with, at the end, the dedication, which is also based in bodhicitta, then the result of that, or the fruit of that, will be like a wish-fulfilling tree that not only produces its fruit continuously, but increasingly. So it will only ever produce more and more fruit. So this is the importance of dedicating the merit. Whatever roots of virtue you have created, if you dedicate them, then they will be like a wish-fulfilling tree. They will produce an unending stream of positive results from now until one attains Buddhahood itself. So the virtue that you have created will only ever increase, and it will never decline, and it will never be wasted. So the dedication is also very important. Each of these three are indispensable, are crucial to practice. And again, I know that you have all heard these teachings many times, that you know these ideas, that these are not new concepts, and that you have been putting them into practice for a very long time. But for me, and perhaps anyone like myself, it's useful to have reminders now and again. I'm not saying, I'm here to tell you something you've never heard before. I'm really not saying that. I don't think that that's true. But all of us can forget. All of us can lose sight of these three most important points of practice. And so, just to remind you of Longchenpa's words, and know that these are Longchenpa's words, this is not my idea, but Longchenpa's. Just to remind you of that, I thought might be of some benefit, and so I bring this up today. Any practice that you are doing, any virtue that you are creating, you should remember Longchenpa's simple instructions that you should always employ these three. These three factors should always be a part of any practice that you do. You generate bodhicitta at the beginning as the preparation, as the initial step. You perform the main part of the practice correctly, non-conceptually, as you are able. And then you dedicate the merit at the end. Whenever we practice any kind of practice, we must have these three parts complete. It is simply not effective to practice with any part, any of these three parts, incomplete. As much as you recognize the need for practice in your life, you should practice in an authentic way. You should practice in an effective and powerful way. Knowing that you need to practice, then you should be filled with the longing to practice correctly, to practice sincerely, effectively, and powerfully. And it relies upon one's motivation. If your motivation is correct, then that is going to set you up for doing authentic practice in an effective way. Knowing that you need to practice, recognizing that you need to practice and train your own mind, then whether you go to the center, the Dharma center, and practice, or whether you stay and practice in your own home, your shrine room, or just sitting upon your cushion, whatever the case may be, whether you are practicing as a group or by yourself, whether you are practicing mundro, the preliminaries, whether you are meditating in calm abiding or shamatha, or as I know many of you have received Dzogchen instruction from Kenpo Namdo Rinpoche, if you are doing Trekchut and Toga practices that he has described in his teachings, it makes no difference whatever level of practice you are doing in whatever setting, however your practice is going, whatever method you are using, it makes no difference. Any practice must have these three parts. Even if you are doing Trekchut and Togal practices, still you need to have proper motivation. Still, all three of these parts of the practice need to be complete. And these are the words of Longchenpa himself. Any practice, any time, you still need these three. When you complete your practice and you dedicate the merit and recite prayers of aspiration, and then you get up from your cushion and go about your other activities, eating, going to work, driving here and there, running errands, whatever it is, whatever else you are doing with your day, then what do you need to do at that time? Because we don't spend our whole days in practice. Generally, at the most, we practice maybe, what, a couple of hours every day? That leaves a lot of the hours of the day when we're not sitting in formal practice. So if formal practice must have these three parts complete, what do we need to do in our daily conduct when we are not sitting in formal practice? We should still fill our minds with Dharma by recalling the kindness of our root guru and the three jewels. We should always remember these. We should always remember the qualities of the objects of refuge without ever forgetting them. We should remind ourselves of them constantly. If we only focus our minds on Dharma for the short time that we spend in formal practice every day, and then the rest of our day, our minds aren't engaged in Dharma at all, then that rolled up piece of paper that we're trying to flatten out, it's not going to stay flat. If you're only trying to flatten it out during your formal practice, then you're putting something heavy on it for maybe a couple of hours a day. And then there's still maybe 22 hours in the day where it's rolled up again. It's never going to stay flat that way. We need to be training our minds in the Dharma, steeping our minds in the Dharma continuously. This means always supplicate your root guru. Always recall the qualities of the three jewels. Always think of the sufferings of sentient beings and fill your mind with compassion for them. Always consider that samsara is filled with suffering from top to bottom, and therefore fill your mind with renunciation and the longing to be free from it in its entirety. This is how you train your mind when you're going about your daily activities, when you're not sitting in formal practice. Just because you're not engaged in formal practice doesn't mean that you disengage from the Dharma entirely. Instead, you should be reminding yourself of the Dharma constantly. You should be bringing these ideas to mind again and again to create this deep familiarity with them. If you are not able to remember the Dharma, these teachings automatically, if the qualities of the three jewels and faith and devotion towards your lama and bodhicitta, compassion, renunciation, if these thoughts don't automatically and naturally continually flow through your mind, then it means you need to train in reminding yourself about them so that they will begin to naturally flow through your mind. These days, everyone has a smartphone. You can set the reminders on your smartphone to remind you of the qualities of the three jewels. You can set alarms so that you are reminded to supplicate the guru every hour. Sure, that sounds funny, but we're just beginners. We need all the help we can get. And we should be filling our minds with Dharma no matter what we are doing. When we are driving in the car, when we're working on the computer, even when we're walking from one place to another, we need to have the Dharma filling our minds each second. The time we practice generally is short, maybe just an hour or two, and the rest of the hours of the day are open. What are we going to do with those hours? We need something there to be weighting down that curly piece of paper for those other 22 hours that we're not sitting in formal practice. Otherwise, that paper will never get flat. So we need to practice. We need to recognize the importance of practice. And we need to recognize the importance of continuously incorporating the Dharma, continuously mingling our minds with the Dharma, even when we're not sitting, our hands folded, our eyes perhaps closed, our minds quiet, even when we're not sitting on our cushion in formal practice. Whatever you are doing, you do not need to separate your mind from the Dharma. The Dharma can fill your mind whether you are going here and there, whether you are sitting, whether you are sleeping, whether you are eating, whatever it is. Whatever it is you are doing, you can find a connection to Dharma activity in that. Even if you're walking somewhere, you can think that you are performing circumambulations clockwise around your root guru and the three jewels, visualizing them at your shoulder. When you lie down to sleep, you can engage in dream yoga and bring forth the practices, if you have received them, on clear light and recognizing clear light in dreams and so forth. When you are just sitting, you can think that you are sitting there receiving the blessings. You can fill your mind with faith in any situation. If you are not recalling Dharma, then just to do a little Dharma when you're sitting on your cushion every day, it's not going to benefit or profoundly transform your mind. So it's very important not only to engage in the formal practice, but also to constantly fill your mind with Dharma in all of your activities. We have heard so many teaching. We've gotten a lot of Dharma over the years. Each one of us needs to make sure that the Dharma teachings we have received are being put to good use in our minds. And that means we are using them as antidotes to our afflictions, to our negativity, to our poisons. If we are not, then all that Dharma we have received, we are just wasting. If we are not using the Dharma we have received to antidote our own poisons, then that Dharma isn't really doing us any good. It's not really being of benefit. Take someone who has some deadly enemy that they know is coming one day, and they spend years stockpiling weapons and preparing themselves for the day when that enemy will arrive. And they get machine guns and bombs and pistols and every kind of weapon imaginable until they have this great arsenal. They make every conceivable preparation for the arriving of their enemy. And let's say the day comes when the enemy actually shows up. If, after all those years of preparation, that person just turns tail and runs away and doesn't use any of the weapons in their arsenal, doesn't make use of any of their training, We're going to say that person is stupid. What did you spend all those years preparing for? What a loser. What an idiot. Well, let's say we have been studying the Dharma for years, and we have this great stockpile of weapons, which are the antidotes to the poisons. And now when the poisons actually show up in our mind, if we don't use the weapons of all the Dharma techniques that we have learned, if we don't use the weapons of all the teachings that we have received against the poisons arising in our mind, aren't we just as stupid as that person? Aren't we just as idiotic and just as big a loser? We should think about that carefully. We have not only the general weapons, the general antidotes of the Buddha's teachings, but particularly those of the Mahayana. We have received very exalted teachings. We have many different methods that we can employ against the poisons as they arise in our minds. We should not be stupid, but we should take up the weapons that we have and use them to the very best of our ability. Now, many have received very high teachings, teachings on how to take the poisons themselves as the path, based on the kindness of the root gurus who have assessed the capacity of their students and decided that such teachings were appropriate. The teachings have been given and given many times on how one can actually take one's poisons as the path. One should know oneself, one's own capacity. If one is able to actually put those teachings into practice and take one's poisons as the path, then one does not need to employ other weapons if one is able to do that correctly. But each of us can only judge our own capacity. And we should know for ourselves what level of Dharma is suitable for us to practice based on what we are capable of, what we are able to do, what our level is. You might think, oh, I've heard a great deal of Dharma. However, if you have never actually used the Dharma, if you've never taken up those weapons against the poisons in your own mind, then you don't really know your head from your tail as far as the Dharma is concerned. You're not really using the Dharma you have learned to practice the Dharma. You are confusing yourself. You are deceiving yourself. You're cheating yourself to think that you are doing Dharma practice just because you've heard a lot of Dharma, but you've never bothered applying it to your own mind. What is the sign that you're really practicing Dharma? If your renunciation of samsara is increasing, if your desire to bring benefit to others is increasing, if your altruism and compassion are increasing, if your three poisons are lessening, if your faith in the root guru and the three jewels is deepening, if your devotion is becoming more profound, if your focus on other people's faults is lessening and your focus on your own faults is increasing, these are all signs that you are practicing the Dharma and practicing authentically. Really, this point about one's own faults and others' faults is very important. It is not the Dharma. It is not Dharma practice to gloss over your own faults and make much of others. It is not the Dharma to pretend your own faults don't exist and to point out others. The Dharma should be like a mirror reflecting our own faults so that we can see them and then work to eradicate them or change them. The Dharma should not be like a pair of eyes that we use to stare at the faults of others. We should use the Dharma to look within our own minds, and where we see faults, we should change them. We should work to eliminate them. If you are very judgmental of others, then that's a sign, being focused on others' faults, that you are not really internalizing the Dharma. Sure, it's easy to point the finger, but you need to look at your own mind. You might look at someone else and say, "How many years have they been in the Dharma? How many years have they been a Buddhist and they're still such a jerk?" Well, maybe. But that's the sign that you yourself are not really practicing, focusing on their faults like that. Really, we need to watch this carefully. As Buddhists, we should have a twofold motivation. We should be motivated to bring temporary happiness and ultimate happiness, to find temporary happiness and ultimate happiness for all. As we have entered the Mahayana, we should have the wish to attain the ultimate state of Buddhahood so that we might bring all beings beyond samsara sufferings and to that state themselves. It really depends on the work that you are doing in your own mind. It's extremely important to look within your mind and to work upon the faults that you find there. Whether you are practicing in the sutra tradition or the tantra tradition, whether you are practicing the outer tantras or the inner tantras, whatever the case may be, we all need reminders. We all need to be practicing with pure motivation and in the correct way. I am not saying these things to you claiming that I have mastered them for myself. I am not bringing up the qualities that a sincere practitioner develops because I'm claiming that those qualities are blossoming forth in my own mind stream. I certainly can't say that. But just I wanted as a reminder to bring up these points to everyone. And so thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, sir. Tata nga tsu yoke ya lakwin, gonda lakwin, thama nye lakwin.
Naso.
Une, tere rezina ta, nga tsu ta lama japtu rinpoche, gondo dibare, kutse jepe tenni, tenni ten namba tuji jisu zoni, tenni chu mambo son yore, chu tsu yandenda ya kwa tsu yore, tata kutse jepe ten yore. Ta nga tsu muntutu, Kung Kusejapet, then Yala, then he Soma Tamchella, then he got as a Koransu talked about the Unganjire,
Koran talked
about it in a Koransu Liskachire, Kusejapet, then Yagatam Shayala, Ta Shirtung, then he gave out the Kwa Fung. Tendra Shini, then you Lamala, Jeffton Puriala, so by Shinayan, Pemata Yabore, Tangarang Semla, Kachapoji, Giao, the other, Karadina, Kungus Homa Sama, Tugun Tenjo, Trump Sanjo, Tizan Langi, Sorju Tarmo, younger than the Chenamala, River Chipoji Jaguio, Karadina, Lama Chick Zomare, Chirinkor Chick Tatsunri. Tell us Tam Sik Nyam Chakdang, Chik Chigla, Chaktokang, Murgavi, Namjur. Tana tell a Tam Sik Nyam Chosemare. Tam Chik Nyam Chaksana, Lamala. Could sell a virtue over regiment, Savanini, Kusetra and attended Tat Yungamari. Tell a shoe left any Nibasakuri. Marons a Nibab Sam Jimija Baramjan Guri, shoe left any Nibasakoya Tondamas of Munduva. Then the carriage goes in a tarambochi, chusuk chigina, chusuk rela, lingan rere, Mavjana rang, tagaji, so and gankerchi mena, chusuk the way with Yogamare. That chusuk the way Yoga Koran to Kayinjika Labna President Riona, Kareona, Jiore, Tela Chitongi in a secretary, Takate Goku on the Tangi, the Yahoo Mashita, Tigogri, Tigre, Nide, Chin Domba Jin Dona, Tela Chihomza. Chokpun, then he kajur. Then it's Talikal in the Girku says, Mamboji go here. That's Hama. There are much Koriku in Nada, see in a Chisoko, Tamongo in a day, so that I linger your bamber yore. Ta Karegoretina Jamba the Su Lingan Tess of Mepa the Su Linga Yopi Matas of Sukurseatam. Kalanya. Ta Carried in a much some not hunting muscle. Number Sanji be sugar juore. Then he lama chickens homare. Lami kusetan yadam. A rungling gatondak tonya. Tamsik yamchak mayomara. Then I say, Chick chigla, sukurshat. Pekacha borisam with me samna. Then Machuso kawasona. Then that tells the younger and your dad tells the younger as you chigla and talk to our chigia bomb and the muya bomb. Tam has in laveadre. May jamba. Jamachana Pantoyo Mare, Jamachas in Hagozon. How heavy I am to get his Jama.
Oh, way,
Miss Jamba Jamachaya Mare, Soso Jamachaya. 소소 자마치야 니 자마치고네 야레 체카치야 당 충관을 총가주 칼라 자르 뇽으로 당 야레 잡바치고네 마르 당 텐다거레 지금 매 잠바 자마치니 추천한 내려고게 된다 판토고 말해
맞아
니 매 잠바기 역보시고 두보시고 따고 말해 새로운 게 역보시고다 되니 역보용 그래 참아 텐다시니 존나 추측은 니나나 리칼리니 뭐요 추측 이런 거지 추측도 흡수니 예신형 보도 흡수니 다바르트 리칼리네 야만 보여냐 그래서 습글 세죠 그래서 지금 감이 약도 샴이 견두고니 습글 세야 굽글 세죠 어미 다다 간거야 제가 요래 지그레 어줌바 간발라 습글 세죠 맞어 뭐 약보가 리칼리 텐다시니 카투 옛나다 니 랍고마르 체선 라마자니 솜마르 림보시야다다 쿠주구요레다 마랑고 무니 삼마다나 잡트름보시 페마사비 카든 체보인 타 판토나 마토나 마랑게 셈라 가레 하리아도 말없는 이촌데 케 판토나 엠페야 보레 마토나 야데 마랑게 셈라 요바다 라브레 니가 잠바타기 메레 맞아 저기 마랑게 셈라 샨도 체보 기테라인 테랑 나트로영 지셋 그 시도형 된다지 구치지 라고인 강아지네요 시도 참참 뭐 도바용 그래 마도가 맞아서 판 로자 그래 된다는 처마기 지 고야게 탑라 나랑 텔라 지 문에 년가르 타르모야니 레바지 잡이 툭튼 춤성하게 뭐지 메레 툭튼 자도 소소 그치라 지 툭바 머제야 지 그치라 탁탁탁 된다지 머가게 남주 머튼 텔라 툭된세 참고셔야 되리 참고성 제가 담스기 냠샤그마선이 툭 던소나 좀 어람진 흑성으로 그래.
맞아.
민 툭 맘든니 좀 사마잔 용거 말이.
맞아.
툭 던나 좀 사는 그래. 때 때나 참아 그 휴지 잡는 데 럼버지 그새 잡아요. 땡그래. 제랑 주지 그 소놈이야. 제보 싹그래. 문에 주토고나라 까주 제시 홈제 쪽본데 가블리 잡는 몸보여라 또 소친 문에 런에 로코 강 텁텁 서러서 수시 그래서 나한테 런톤 데마젠톤 말이다. Rantun de, lami kuse tani tamsik nyamshik maashik na rantarwaatan tamchen chenpi kompang towek jira. Ta rantun manna jantun rebe. Mi samna ta jantun mare samudu, rantun de samudu, tenra shi. Ti rang tondak dribya la sen na gawa yora. Tani rang tondak dribna yakbondi u samudu. Ta jiya yende, mambo jiya me tuji shi ta semna ngune kuchi kuchi mi kerang ta pumo sala tsukni, ni pumo ni sala tsukni. Kerang namba la tuji shi jiya la tung tung chum tsang.
So today's teaching is scheduled both for the morning and the evening two times. And you might wonder why it needs to go on so long or why it needs to happen twice. And really, all that I am trying to offer to you is my own observation and my own experience. For me, Ngelta Rinpoche, our Lama, may he have a long life. He is still with us, and he holds all of us in his compassion. We are all his students, and he has taught us the Dharma so wonderfully, again and again, continuously. And as his disciples, as his students together, then of course we all wish for his long life and pray for his long life. And in order to support his longevity, then we are all in the service of his activities. And in order to bring him long life, what we can do is to create virtue, accomplish virtue, to do practice, to eliminate negativity and non-virtue. This is how you create the circumstances for the Lama to have a long life, and it's very good also to recite long life prayers, particularly. But in general, the activities and the harmony of the students are extremely important factors when you're talking about the long life of the guru. I come to tell you a few things today, and not because I think that I am so important, but because I feel some urgency to share with you all my observations, as we are all students of Gyaltra Rinpoche, and we all wish to support his long life and his activities. The most important things that we can do are to maintain harmony between ourselves and to keep pure discipline. And it is my very great hope that as a Sangha, as a community, we can do that. We are all students of the same lamas. We are all students of the same gurus. We have all joined in the same mandala together. We have all taken our places in the ranks of the same mandalas together. And therefore, having received transmission from the same lamas and been initiated into the same mandalas, we do have samaya. We have commitment to one another. And we need to hold that commitment with respect. We need to recognize that that commitment or connection to each other does exist. And we need to keep that pure between ourselves. This is how we can benefit the Sangha. This is how we can benefit the Lama. And whenever we allow ourselves to fall into jealousy or to fall into dislike of one another, that is how we break those vows. And this is how we bring obstacles to the long life of our gurus. Not only that, by taking one another, our Dharma brothers and sisters, as our objects of dislike or as our objects of jealousy or aversion or whatever the case may be, we are actually using our Dharma connection to accumulate non-virtue, to accumulate fault. And this is a very, very great mistake. This is a complete perversion of the Dharma's intent. There is no reason to use the Dharma as anti-Dharma. There is no reason to use the Dharma to create non-virtue. And when we feel jealousy towards one another, when we dislike one another, when we harbor ill will towards one another, spread rumors about one another, mistreat one another, and disrespect one another, we are using our Dharma connection as a basis for non-virtue, and there is no reason for that whatsoever. We are all students of the same teachers, and we should respect one another. We should hold one another with respect and with affection. At each of the Dharma centers, in order for the center to be run properly, in order for the center to function, there has to be any number of administrators, leaders, and so on and so forth. I don't even know what they all are, president and such like. You need those who are taking care of the Dharma centers and who are responsible for overseeing it and looking after it. And I know each center has people in those positions. And then as far as supporting the activities at the center, then there are people fulfilling the different jobs and functions, such as the umze or chant leader, the chopan or ritual assistant. There are translators, there are workers doing these various different things, all supporting the activities at the center. There is the disciplinarian overseeing and helping everyone to stay harmonious and so forth. You need many, many different people fulfilling many different functions for the Dharma Center to work successfully. And I know each center has people in those different functions. Each person needs to hold the others with respect. The workers need to hold the leaders with respect. The leaders need to hold the workers with respect. All who come to the center need to recognize and appreciate that the people fulfilling those different functions are making it possible for the center to flourish, and they should hold them with respect. Likewise, the leaders and workers should hold all of those who come to use the center with respect so that the center might fulfill its purpose. There should be respect between all members of the Dharma Center. This is extremely important. This means they should listen to one another. This means that those who are in positions of leadership should be listened to, their advice taken or their orders obeyed. We need to think carefully. As Buddhists, even, it means that we have to follow discipline and keep discipline. As students of the same guru, it means we should hold each other with respect. If we really want the Lama to have a long life, we need to do this. We need to maintain harmony and we need to maintain pure discipline in all of our relations with each other as Sangha members, with each other as Rinpoche students. We should be Even as Buddhists, we should be trying to do what is best for ourselves and others in the long term, in the ultimate sense. As practitioners of Vajrayana who have Samaya commitments, it is extremely important that we are aware of and careful to keep those Samaya commitments. We should know that we have this connection with one another. We should respect that connection and we should respect each other so that the centers might flourish and the Lama might be able to have a long life. It's inevitable that with any group of people or at any Dharma center, of course there's going to be problems and difficulties. Of course there is going to be jealousy. Of course there are going to be rivalries or ill will that will break out between people. Each one of us, in order to guard against this, in order to remedy these difficulties when they inevitably arise, each one of us needs to keep track of ourselves. We need to examine our own minds and see our own faults. We need to each weigh ourselves. You don't need to weigh anybody else. You need to know your own weight. You weigh yourself on the scale and then you yourself know what your situation is. You know, oh, I'm getting a little heavy, I shouldn't eat so much. Or you think, oh, I'm losing weight, maybe I need to eat a little more. Whatever the case may be, you need to weigh yourself on the scale. It's no use for you to weigh other people. It's not your business how heavy or light they are. Likewise, it's not your business if someone else is acting correctly or incorrectly, if they are being good or being bad. You don't need to check on them, you need to check on yourself. Rinpoche has a number of different centers under the umbrella of the organization Yeshin Nyingpo. And it isn't just within each center that we need to keep harmony. All the centers need to keep harmony between themselves as well. The people at one center need to respect the people at another center. We are all students of the same gurus. We all need to respect one another. We all need to hold one another with affection. We need to not be jealous. We need to not have rivalry or competitiveness. We need to not look down on one another or see one another with contempt. In short, we need to try to be decent human beings. As we are all students of Gyaltra Rinpoche, then it is in all of our best interests that he live a long time, that he have a long life free of obstacles. And it is up to all of us to help create the conducive circumstances for his long life by keeping harmony and holding pure discipline. For myself, Gyaltra Rinpoche has always held me with incredible kindness. And it is because of this that I have come here today and asked to have the opportunity to say a few words to you all, that I have asked to have the chance to say a few things and to speak my mind, because I feel at this point to not say anything would be my fault. And so it is only out of the hope that this will be of some benefit to everyone that is the reason why I have asked to have this chance to come and speak to you all. Every Dharma center has many, many participants, many, many members. And it doesn't matter how you are participating at the center or how you are connecting to the center. Everyone who has any connection to the center, that connection should be one of harmony and pure discipline. And this is my sincere wish, my devout wish. And I fold my hands at my heart to each of you in my request that you do this, that you keep harmony and that you keep pure discipline. These two go together. Without harmony, you cannot keep pure discipline. Harmony means don't fight, don't argue, don't harbor jealousy or dislike or ill will toward each other. Treat one another with decency. Have loving kindness and cultivate compassion and patience for one another. That is how you keep harmony. And as far as pure discipline, as we have received Samaya, the secret mantra commitments, to keep pure discipline means not to let those commitments deteriorate, not to let our Samaya degenerate, but to keep our Samaya purely, to keep pure discipline. It is as simple as that. If you are acting out of harmony, if you are filled with jealousy, dislike, and so forth, of course you are not going to be able to keep your samaya. So harmony and pure discipline, they go together. Really, at all of these Dharma centers, you have people in every position. It is wonderful the way that you have enough people to support. You have You have chant leaders where you need chant leaders. You have ritual assistants where you need them. You have translators when you need translators. You have people to come and help. You have everything that you need for the flourishing of the Dharma centers. Now, so that they actually can flourish, each person needs to keep harmony and pure discipline. You should at least do this out of self-interest, if nothing else. You should at least do this recognizing in order to keep your own samaya, in order to keep your own commitments, you need to keep harmony and have discipline within the sangha. If you are not even able to keep discipline for yourself, you are certainly not going to be able to keep it in order to benefit others. At least that's my thinking. So please think on this carefully and try to cultivate harmony and a sense of respect and appreciation for one another. Beyond that, I don't have many things to say. I didn't come to give some complicated presentation. I just wanted to share these thoughts with you. And really, I am on my knees before you in my request that each one examine your own mind and keep harmony and pure discipline.